Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Malvina Energy Quarterly Results Conference Call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. The pre-registered questions will be addressed either during or after the presentation. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Robert Zammit, CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you for that introduction, and welcome everybody to this conference call. Just a couple of things I'd like to mention upfront, as I'll walk you through the highlights of the quarter and also answer your questions. I'll refer to Cuba Petróleo and CUPET. They're both actually the same entity, so if you hear me talking about Cuba Petróleo or CUPET, they're the same. Also, through this presentation or discussion, I'll also refer to AMEC or AGMI or our Chinese partner. That's also the same entity. It's the partner that we had previously for Block 9 in Cuba. So just starting off the conversation and talking a little bit about where we got to during the quarter with 488P or Beehive, as we call it. We made some good progress during the quarter. The final data set, which is the culmination of seismic survey processing, was received and importantly was accepted by Total and Santos on the 2nd of April. And that's important because then what that does is triggers the six-month option period, which means that Total and Santos have 6 months from that date, so until the 2nd of October 2019, to elect to exercise their farm-in. And if they do exercise their farm-in, they'll take 80% equity, leaving us with 20% equity, and they'll be obligated to fully fund all the costs from that point until the end of the first well, which is anticipated to be the Beehive-1 well. During the quarter, they also commenced the planning for potential drilling in the event they do exercise the option. This included a number of activities, such as preparing a draft of an environmental plan, looking at well concept identification, and the commencement of rig selection activity. So all this is being set up so that if they do exercise, we can look forward to them drilling in the second half of  2020. I've got some questions on 488, and I'll answer those a little bit later and get into a little bit more detail. In terms of Block 9, obviously it was an eventful quarter. As you all know, we signed a farm-in agreement on New Year's Eve in December 2018, late last year, with a subsidiary of a company called Anhiguanga Mining Investment Company, or AGMI, as I'll refer to them. There were a number of conditions precedent in that contract that needed to be satisfied by 31st of March. Otherwise, either of us had certain termination rights. Those conditions precedent included regulatory approvals for both China and Cuba, and also certain things that we wanted them to do with respect to the bank guarantees that were in place that they were then obligated to provide. We worked very closely with them during the quarter. During March, we actually had a delegation go and visit with them in Beijing and then went and toured their operation in Kyrgyzstan, to have a look at what they were doing there and the way that they run their business. And at the time, even though this was only not that long ago in March, they did advise us and also Cuba Petróleo that there would be some delay in getting their government approvals. But they did reconfirm their commitment to meeting all of the obligations in the farm-out agreement, including the drilling of two wells by November this year. CUPET gave us a waiver until the 30th of April to provide the bank guarantee or an equivalent arrangement because the company AGMI had not provided the bank guarantee at that point in time. So we monitored it closely, and since that time, AGMI or AMEC did not progress the conditions precedent and their obligations to our satisfaction, so we elected as a company to terminate the farm-in agreement on April 26th. To enable us to pursue alternative farm-out opportunities. And you know, we've told them that should they reorganize themselves and get themselves in a position to be able to move forward again, we would be happy to talk to them, but at this stage we wanted to progress other alternatives. And again, I've got some questions in detail on that, which I'll come back to a little bit later. In terms of Cuba as well, whilst we're here talking about Santa Cruz, just as an overview, during the quarter, early in the month, we had a Canadian expert, an ex-Sherritt guy who had been operating in Cuba for almost a decade. He went and assessed the operational status of the facilities at Santa Cruz because it is an existing oil field. Now, from a safety perspective and environmental perspective, but also to see what potential optimization opportunities may exist. There were some facilities-based optimization opportunities identified by him. He's given us a report, and you know, we'll consider those with the operator once we've got the regulatory approvals for Santa Cruz and have a clear title on that. We have progressed the geoscience preparations as well. Our team has been working on that during the quarter, and I think it's fair to say that we have identified some significant opportunities that we want to pursue in Santa Cruz. So we're you know, looking forward to being able to progress those. In terms of cash balance, we ended the quarter at $3.7 million, and we actually were quite active during the quarter looking at a number of farm-in and other potential opportunities, including some corporate opportunities. And we have been progressing our preparations for a potential dual listing in the UK in the second half of this year. So I think that covers the summary of the quarter. And now what I'd like to do is then go to your specific questions. And thank you for submitting them. I think it's a great opportunity for me to be able to answer those questions for those of you I don't speak to regularly. I'm going to ask Melanie Layden, our company secretary here, to read out the questions, and then I'll proceed to answer them down the list. We'll focus firstly on the Cuba questions, and then we'll come back to the other questions later on.
Great. Thanks, Robert. First question here on Cuba is, how far has the company been set back on Block 9 operations with the latest announcements regarding the farm-out termination? Is there any realism at all in shareholders hoping for a meaningful activity in this block this year? If not drilling, certainly preparations and mobilisations.
Okay, so let me expand a little bit on where we are with Block 9 and I guess a little bit of a recap as to where we would have been if our partner had delivered what they had promised. You know, we would have been well set up for drilling this year. We are of the view that we prefer to have a partner funding our drilling, and we are now talking again to parties who were interested in the past as well as some new parties. You know, our permitting for our two preferred prospects, Alameda and Zapata, that's completed. But the only thing we need to do there is to nominate a drilling rig and the timing. And, you know, we appreciate the cooperation we've had from the Cuban regulatory authorities in this regard to enable us to get to that point. We are aware that there is a suitable rig available in the second half of this year. And, you know, that's a great opportunity for a new partner to come in and potentially see near-term drilling. So we're all set up for that. And all of this, of course, though, is depending upon funding.
How far advanced is the company in potential new partnering in Block 9 with a new partner, and is any new partnering likely to be on equal or better terms than the terminated AGMI one? Are we looking for an upfront cash component? What is the current sentiment and enthusiasm for partnering with us in Cuba with the complications that seem to be in place?
Yeah, look, that's a very specific question. I've had a couple of other of you submit some general questions about what sort of terms can we expect. And, you know, obviously it's not possible for me to say right now what these would look like. Certainly the people we are talking to are aware of the deal that we had with AGMI. So that sets a benchmark in a way, as do other deals that have been done sort of around the same time frame. And we often talk to people about the sort of deal that we did with Total and Santos for Beehive, as an example of another structure. So, you know, the structure of the AGMI deal was a little bit difficult for many of our investors to understand, but just to give you an explanation, it sort of offset the fact that there was no upfront cash with a lower residual equity, ultimately at only 12.5%, but we were fully funded for not only drilling the three wells, but for all development costs that would have followed. So that wasn't a traditional deal. And it may have, in the current circumstances, I think, for the other parties that we're going to be engaged with, it's more likely we're going to end up with a more traditional deal, although we don't know. And if that happens, then we would certainly be aiming for cash up front, certainly reimbursement of our costs. Having said that, you know, we're at the mercy of the market. The market is competitive. We'll do our best, of course. Ultimately, we need to accept the best deal that we can get. You know, generally in terms of Cuba, from a geopolitical perspective, the pool of potential farminees is much more limited than in other countries due to the US embargo. So we have to work hard, identify potential partners that can operate in Cuba and who can take a strategic view of the opportunity we think Block 9 presents.
When can investors and the market expect tangible news regarding a definitive timeline to operations on Santa Cruz?
Okay, well, With respect to Santa Cruz, what I can say at this point is that, you know, we think it's a very exciting opportunity from a geological perspective. We haven't gone into a lot of detail publicly as yet because we haven't got the regulatory approvals completed. So it wouldn't be, I think, commercially savvy of us to start talking about how great it is at this stage. You may sort of be wondering, why is it taking so long? And, you know, is this just Cuba? Is there a problem with getting things approved? But, you know, it's not Cuba. Let me say that those of you that are following us closely will know that it took nearly 6 months for us to get divestment regulatory approval for New Zealand, for us divesting an asset to a known party. And in Australia, it takes months as well. So, you know, in Cuba, we have the additional complication that these long-term contracts that we're looking to sign become enshrined in local law, and that's really a security for investors. But, you know, this means that there is a very strict sort of process that needs to be complied with. And we have made our various submissions and provided all the documents necessary. So in terms of operations, though, we have not yet commenced any detailed planning. We need to really get on title first to start that detailed planning.
In announcements quoting the chance of success for the Cuba projects, the percentages range from approximately 20% to 32%. This doesn't seem very high. Is that considered reasonable or even good in industry terms?
Yeah, look, I think the chance of success numbers need to be considered in the context of the size of the prize. You know, the prize in our Block 9 is quite high for an onshore play. So we think the risk-reward is attractive, and ultimately that's what it's about. You know, in that sense, for example, the opportunity, an opportunity of the size that we have identified, we think that the chance of success numbers are pretty typical. If you take a look at Beehive, for example, it's got a similar risk profile again, 20% chance of success, but it's the potential that if it works, it's a tremendous opportunity, and that's how you get big players involved like Total and Santos. You know, you could be doing other things that are much smaller, that have a higher chance of success, but these are really quite substantial opportunities.
Two wells are due to be drilled by November in Cuba. When would you expect the first to be started?
All right, so I want to clarify something here in terms of obligations versus what we had expected to be done under our farming agreement with AGMI. The current obligation in Block 9 is that we need to drill a single well. Now, that well can be a shallow well. It doesn't have to be the wells that we've identified, but that's the current obligation that we need to drill that by November 2019. And in our deal with AGMI, they committed to do more than that, to drill two wells by November 2019. So at this stage, without funding finalised, it's really difficult for me to give a definitive answer. However, you know, if we are able to get the funding finalised, the framework is in place, as I mentioned earlier, in terms of permitting and et cetera, for drilling to occur in the second half of this year.
What are Melbana's plans if QPET does not grant a waiver to the April 30th, 2019 deadline in relation to drilling Block 9?
Okay, so again, clarifying, there is no obligation to drill a well by April deadline. The obligation is by November this year. As we mentioned in our quarterly, we are in discussions at the moment with QPET regarding the way forward for Block 9, and there's some wide-ranging discussions going on in terms of the obligations.
Does the failure to conclude a farm-out deal with AGMI put the Santa Cruz project at risk in any way?
Well, look, I mean, the failure of the farm-out deal with AGMI, it's certainly disappointing for everybody, all the stakeholders, including QPET, you know, the national oil company. We had kept them informed of our progress before we signed with that company. We sought their blessing prior to signing with that company, and we kept them fully informed throughout the period since then. So I think it's fair to say that they are understanding what our plan was, and they could see what we were trying to do, and they can see the impact of the failure of AGMI to perform and what that's done to our plan. So I'm hopeful that these circumstances, which I certainly think are unprecedented in my experience in the industry, I'm hopeful that they won't have any effect on the final approval of the Santa Cruz IOR, but it is really too early to say at this point.
There has been a recent focus on the Sherritt drilling results in Block 10. Given its distance and differing geology, what relevance does this have to do with Block 9, other than the positive of having more equipment in the country?
Well, we mentioned Sherritt as a catalyst really for our stock, just because finding oil in the area where your acreage is always very positive. I mean, it improves the general perception of the area, the sentiment of people, and it's a positive thing. It's a positive vibe. You know, our geologists tell us that the Sherritt targets are obviously different structures from ours, and although we're on the same trend, success there does not really impact the technical assessment of our opportunity, but it certainly helps with the sentiment for exploration in the region and the general vibe around Cuba.
Are the US sanctions on Cuba likely to affect Melbourne?
Firstly, let me say, and I'll get asked a little bit about this generally, you know, the US sanctions on Cuba are a two-edged sword for our company. On the one hand, if there were no sanctions, then we would have been in the past, and we would be now for things like Santa Cruz competing against American companies, and there's almost no chance we had the opportunity to acquire what we have in Cuba. Now, on the other hand, the sanctions do result in some increased logistical difficulties for us, some increased costs, a reduction in the competition for some services. So, you know, there are pros and cons from a purely company perspective. Now, the recent changes in US policy really does not impact anything that we're doing as Melbourne. It's just a continuation of the same.
How has the company gone from confident of drilling progressing at Block 9 to terminating the farm-in agreement?
Yeah, look, I recognise it may seem like a substantial sort of change over a very short period of time, but as I tried to explain earlier, you know, there was a feeling from our perspective that, you know, we have all seen Chinese companies do some miraculous things. You know, once they get moving, they can proceed very, very quickly. So, you know, if you were following our releases, you would have seen we were referring to their continuing recommitment. They committed on a continuous basis to the terms of the farm-out agreement, not just to us, but also to the regulator. So it wasn't really until late in April that we formed the view that they really weren't progressing satisfactorily, and we decided we need to move on, terminate, and give other companies the opportunity.
How long is it likely to take to get another partner? Are conditions more favourable now for a deal? And what are the board's contingency plans if this doesn't eventuate?
Look, I think I've answered part of that before. You know, generally, I think the farm-out market is better now than it was 6 months ago. But for Cuba specifically, because of the rhetoric from the US, it hasn't assisted the sentiment in the market. You know, as I already stated, we're working very closely with CUPET to ensure that we get some flexibility to be able to progress Block 9 and exploit the potential of the block. Internally, you know, we're continually reassessing our contingency plans, and we're looking to have multiple options available. Okay, I think we can now finish off with Cuba and go through some of the other ones, Melanie.
Sure. What is the likelihood of Santos and Total taking the full option term to make a drill or drop decision on Beehive? Could we potentially expect news on this sooner than the last day of the full 6 month option term?
Yes, well, obviously, I can't speak for them, but I always like to look at the bigger picture to understand what the motivations are of those two companies. You know, if you're following the industry, you will have noticed in February this year that Santos announced that it had aligned its interest in the Bonaparte Gulf across five permits in the area, I think it was, all around Beehive and 488. So, you know, that's a real positive thing in terms of their interest in the area. Their CEO, I think, mentioned in a public release that they're chasing material resource opportunities in that area. So, again, positive vibe. And both Total and Santos were involved in our submission that we made to the regulator in 2018 when we asked them for some changes to the work program obligations, but also committed that if we were proceeding, we'd be drilling by December 2020. So working backwards on all that in terms of lead time and considering long lead items, environmental permitting of 9 to 12 months, and considering that the options expire in October, both Total and Santos are aware that we need to do some pre-work in the first half of this year. And as we mentioned in the quarterly, they're progressing that work. They're spending money to progress that readiness for drilling. And I think, you know, particularly on the environmental permits, that's a substantial effort and substantial cost, and they've committed to do that. So From a personal perspective, and I guess in the Melbourne perspective, everything we are seeing is going in the right direction. It doesn't mean they're going to exercise. We don't know that. But from what I'm seeing, I couldn't ask for anything more at this point. I'm hopeful that we'll see some more concrete steps before the deadline. I think we should be able to see those, but I can't guarantee it. For example, rig selection. But frankly, it's up to them if they exercise at all, and if they do, at or before the October deadline. From a positive perspective as well, the market, I think, for this type of opportunity in Australia has improved since we did the deal with Santos and Total. And we have been contacted by a number of other companies that would like to look at the opportunity to get involved with Beehive should the opportunity be available. It's not available right now, but there are other companies circling if we do have any issues there.
Is the company seriously committed to a dual listing to promote and expose the company, of which has been mooted many times, but to date nothing is happening? How is the company actively looking at obtaining greater global exposure to investors?
Yes, the short answer is yes, we are seriously committed. You will have noted as shareholders that we amended our constitution at our last AGM to accommodate a UK AIM listing. And it doesn't really take much imagination, I think, to see that if AGMI had delivered on their obligations, we would have been really well set up with all the building blocks in place to proceed with the dual listing. So, that hasn't eventuated. That's the reality. So we need to tune our plans to fit the reality. In recent times, we've had some discussions with advisors looking at whether AIM is the right board or whether it should be a main board listing, and we're still considering that. But the principle of a dual listing in the UK is certainly attractive to us and something we're looking to do, whether by dual list or even possibly a merger with an already UK-listed company. In either case, there's a number of regulatory and practical steps we need to go through in that process, and we're aware of those, and we want to ensure that when we're ready, we can move forward on a timely basis once those blocks are in place.
Would the company consider issuing a monthly operation and portfolio overview to keep the market and shareholders fully abreast of what is going on?
I understand the desire for more information about what's going on. I can see that from the questions I've got. Certainly, I think when there's an expectation of operational activity, there'll be more information coming around. You can rest assured we are committed to providing maximum news flow when we can. Sometimes there are constraints on us. We can't always put every single step out there. We have obligations of confidentiality to the stakeholders, to the government sometimes, to joint venture parties. But we do our best to keep you all informed about what we're doing. And certainly I would expect that when we do get to the stage of field operations, there will be regular and frequent updates as milestones are reached. And of course, we have our continuous disclosure obligation for any information that's price sensitive.
How will the company fund its operations, including any guarantees, over the next 12 months?
So as you will have noted in the last quarterly, and as I mentioned, we finished the quarter with 3.7 million Aussie dollars in cash, no debt. So this is sufficient, we think, to cover our base business costs, but certainly not any material field-related activities for which we'll be seeking industry funding for. You may have noted as well that we are in dialogue with CUPET regarding the guarantee obligation. So let me clarify. Right now, there is no guarantee in place. Okay, that was an obligation of our farminee, and it wasn't done. One of the reasons that we did terminate the arrangement with them. So there is no guarantee in place. So we are in discussions with CUPET about a waiver. We've previously had a waiver to have to put one in, and we've asked them for, some consideration of a potential ongoing waiver to provide that guarantee. And, we know that they understand the current circumstances are difficult and unexpected, and we hopeful and anticipate their support, but there is really no guarantee, if you pardon the pun. We are also active in our pursuit of the dual listing in the UK, as I mentioned before. That'll open the door to a new capital market. Our first preference, though, is to introduce a partner at the asset level, via some sort of farm-in, farm-out, from our perspective, and that will hopefully enable us to recover some of our historical costs as part of the deal, so then we can minimise or eliminate the need to raise any capital at the parent level.
How are discussions progressing regarding the Tassie Shoal?
Okay, so I've had a few questions about Tassie Shoal. We won't be going through all of them here, but just to give you a little bit of an update, and I know there are investors on the line who actually started out with the company because of their interest in Tassie Shoal. So we're in a little bit of a wait and see pattern with those projects. What we really need to see happen is that there needs to be some clarity around what is going on around the backfilling of the Darwin LNG plant. As you probably know, if you're following the industry, both Evans-Shoal and Barossa gas fields are looking at backfilling into Darwin. Barossa is claiming that it's going to be the one that does that, which leaves the Evans-Shoal gas field without a home. We have had some discussions with the players in those fields, and it's still not final which field will actually get into to Darwin LNG. So once that's done, we'll then be in a position to go and talk to them, particularly the party that does not have a solution, and we'll really just have to wait and see how that pans out. But certainly that's an opportunity for us, but it's really one where we are reliant on third-party gas, so we're having to wait. Of course, remember, we have long-term permits, which are of interest to everybody, till 2052 for both our methanol and our LNG plant.
And the final question for today, shareholders are suffering from continued delays to tangible progress on our assets. What has been learnt from this, and how can this be turned around quickly?
Yeah, well, look, no one likes to see delays, and, we're, as a team, we're no different here. All of our assets, and I think this is important for you all to remember, we're not trying to do little things. The things that we are doing are disproportionately high impact for a company of our size, and our market cap. And these sort of significant projects, they seem to always take more time than what we would like. Now, from our perspective, it's much easier to have action if you're drilling a $500,000 well, but the impact of success in that case, as I mentioned earlier, it may not be substantial. In our case, if we have success with anything that we're doing, it's going to be game-changing for the company and potentially for the region that we're in as well. So, we're trying to do big things as a very small company, and there are delays which in some ways are out of our control. Okay, so I think that wraps up the questions. Thank you very much for submitting those, and I encourage you to follow us. We do try to be active on LinkedIn and Twitter, and also we put a lot of time into our website to try and keep everybody up to date. So I appreciate you all listening in.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.